You ever heard the word sedentary? How many of you are sedentary? Mike raised his hand. You're the one that had the hymnal that didn't work, remember? You had the page out of place, you know, your name in it. Sedentary means accustomed to sitting. It means taking little exercise. It's basically the American lifestyle. It means you work in an office, you ride in a car, and your recreation is watching TV. It's the American lifestyle that has developed to a large extent, and it is killing us. It is absolutely killing us. My current book, as usual, an adventure story, The River of Doubt, on Teddy Roosevelt's journey down a river in South America after he was not reelected for the presidency when he was running for his third term. I've heard reference made to Teddy Roosevelt and his physical energy, his efforts to keep himself in condition and shape. And so I want to read you just a couple of paragraphs out of the introduction area in the first chapter of the book. It says, in a lifetime of remarkable achievement, Roosevelt had shaped his own character and that of his country through sheer force of will, relentlessly choosing action over inaction. Championed what he famously termed the strenuous life. And it goes on to describe the fact that when he faced a tragedy or a challenge, that he would throw himself into it with energy and determination, and when he faced a loss, he would go out and find another challenge in his life that he could face in order to work his way through that process. It also goes back and reflects on his infancy and where some of that motivation came from. So the impulse to defy hardship became a fundamental part of Roosevelt's character, honed from the earliest childhood. Frail and sickly as a child and plagued with life-threatening asthma, Roosevelt forced himself into a regimen of harsh physical exercise in order to conquer his weakness. His sister Corrine remembered her brother as a frail, fragile, patient sufferer struggling with the efforts to breathe in the nursery there in New York City. Before Theodore had reached adolescence, he had already resolved to free himself from invalidism and frailty through what Corrine described as regular monotonous motion, call that working out, swinging from horizontal bars, struggling with awkward dumb barbells, Petey, as he was called as a child, as his family called him, slowly broadened his chest, strengthened his arms, and transformed himself into a young man whose body was as sure as his mind. Although it was Theodore's own iron discipline that brought about the transformation, it was his father's encouragement that sparked his resolve. Theodore Sr. looms large in the lives of all of his children, but his older son was his hero. One of my memories, but for his older son, he was a hero. Theodore looked at his father in a gigantic way. One of my memories, Roosevelt wrote later in life, is my father walking up and down the room with me in his arms at night when I was a very small person, and I'm sitting up in bed, gasping with my father and mother trying to help me. Desperate for their child to breathe, it goes through some different treatments that they went through to try to assist him in being able to breathe and fighting the asthma. Finally, Theodore Sr. sat his son down and told him that he had the power to change his fate, but that he would have to work hard to do it. He said, Theodore, you have a mind, but you do not have the body. He said, without the help of the body, the mind cannot go as far as it should. You must make your body. It is hard drudgery to make one's body, but I know you will do it. T.D., then only 11 years old, responded, he says, I will make my body. Roosevelt did make his body, and he never again allowed it to grow weak or idle. On the contrary, what began as drudgery soon became a compulsion. Throughout his adult life, Roosevelt would relish physical exertion and use it, not just in a way to keep his body fit and his mind sharp, but as his most effective weapon against depression and despair. When he fought depression and despair, he would throw himself into physical activity to counter the effects of that. Sedentary. the American lifestyle, and it's killing us. In Isaiah 40, and verse number 27, I really thought that if I used an example by Theodore Roosevelt, in some ways it would begin to form a disconnect, because he forcefully forced his body. But I do want to say, brethren, you know, many of us are older, and many of you are older than I. There still is a very, very important part of what God has given us to do that includes our caring for ourselves in a physical way. Isaiah 40 in verse number 27. Why do you say, O Jacob, and speak, O Israel, my way is hidden from the Lord, and my just claim is passed over by my God? Have you not known, have you not heard, the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, neither faints nor is weary? There is no searching of his understanding. God doesn't get tired. He doesn't work out. He doesn't have to stay in shape. He has all power. But it says in verse 29, he gives power to the weak. I believe this is focused spiritually. But I also believe that you have a physical component that cannot be simply left out. He gives power to the weak, and to those who have no might, he increases strength. Even the youth shall faint and be weary. The young men shall utterly fall. On physical energy alone, it isn't enough in God's service. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. Spiritually speaking, that is absolutely true. Does that then neglect the physical as well? Does God only do it for us? Does he only do it in spite of us? James said that faith without works, faith, belief in God, our commitment to God, without our action, is dead. And when God says that he will renew our strength, it will mount up with wings like eagles, run and not be weary, walk and not be faint, does that mean that we have no part to play? I do not agree. We are in a culture, because of many blessings, that has provided us with convenience, not peace in this culture, but convenience and comfort. And yet it has hurt us in many, many ways. Somebody handed me an article a few months back. I don't even remember where it came from. I apologize. But it's about Edith Odoms, who's 94 years old and is active and working out. It says here, she just finished a mile walk in 17 minutes. That was her best time here at 94. But what's interesting, it says her fitness routine was born out of illness. In her 80s, she broke a hip, suffered several serious illnesses, had two strokes, including one that left her paralyzed for a time. I read part of this in a different sermon, but I brought it back. It was just too good. It says, when I was paralyzed, I thought, I'm going to get over this, she says, making a fist. I believe if you have a pain anywhere in your body, you get after it. In the 1990s, after the death of her husband, she moved from California, or to California, to live with her daughter. Her daughter introduced her to a particular nutrition and exercise program. And I thought, well, maybe that's something for me. I knew I was going to have to do something if I was going to live. I had to exercise, get on a diet. She now walks a daily mile, attends a senior fitness class 3 days a week, goes to a martial arts class twice a week. Pat goes to martial arts class how many times a week, Pat? Twice a week. How old? All right. Take back those chuckles. Because Pat can see you to the door. She considered adding square dancing, but didn't have a partner. I know it's working, she says. The doctor says, I have no problems at all. It is the real thing, brethren. We're flesh. We're physical. We're not just spiritual. Our minds require physical sustenance. There are certain things that we must do to care for this temple that God has given us. And we must. The responsibility that we have in our calling to serve before him is to serve before him in the might and power of his strength. That requires us to be willing to also do our part. 1 Timothy 4 connects into this, and I think in the past maybe we have not is carefully rendered this as strongly as it should be in terms of the benefit of the physical and not just the spiritual as well. But 1 Timothy 4 and verse number 8. Bodily exercise profits a little. And the King James says is profiteth little. In other words, it's like it isn't really worth much. And the comparison is being made here to the spiritual. But godliness is profitable in all things. Therefore, if you got something that's profitable in a little, and you got something that's profitable in a lot, then let's have what's a lot. And I think we've tended to lean that direction in this. It is comparing the physical to the spiritual, but the spiritual is described as having a promise in the life that is now and a promise in that which is to come. The spiritual benefit is for eternity. But does that mean the physical benefit doesn't count or isn't important or isn't necessary? You know why we're not having a backpacking trip this summer. Christina told me Luke wouldn't be ready. No, she, believe me, she didn't tell me that. She would never have said that. But I know Luke could take it. Well, we're going to have a party, and I think it's great. It keeps me here for a Sabbath instead of out, and it gives me the opportunity to be gone for camp, be gone for Nigeria, not be gone for the rest of the summer as well. It fell very nicely in that way. But it says, bodily exercise profits a little, or is the margin in the King James says, for a little while, which means now in this flesh. But spiritual benefits not only in the flesh, but in the life to come. So the benefit of physical exercise is in this flesh. And for us to neglect to care for ourselves in that way is indeed negligence before God in our service, in our calling. The word exercise comes from the Greek gymnase, which means gymnasium. It isn't a reference to working out in the field, although there's great benefit in that as well. It is a reference to athletic training with a purpose or a goal in mind. Gymnasium is where that word, at least where our word comes from in that respect. Godliness is profitable for all time. But physical exercise, bodily exercise, is important in this flesh. Important. And should not be left out. Ecclesiastes 10 brings it back in a little more, well, I guess, confronts us a little more directly. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse number 16. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child, and your princes feast in the morning. Woe to you whose leaders eat for pleasure. Now, should we have pleasure and satisfaction in our feasting? Yes. But it's talking about that is the source and purpose of their feasting only, simply for pleasure, to satisfy the flesh. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time. They feast for strength. They feast for energy and ability to work and to produce and to contribute. For strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness, the building decays. And through idleness of hands, the house leaks. Because of a lack of energy and commitment, because of a lack of the ability and willingness to put themselves forward in this way, there is great suffering. And there is loss. We are the temple of God's Holy Spirit. We're the repository where God places His spirit and mind. And He expects us to do our part to care for ourselves. U.S. News came out just a couple weeks back and had a whole section on exercise. And one of the articles went through and gave a listing of, the title is No More Excuses. And then it goes through and it takes each of the excuses that are given because we can't do these things, and then it addresses each one. The number one excuse, the biggest excuse that everyone uses is they're simply too busy. And their answer for it is anything that is important to you, you will find time to do. If it's important, you'll find time to do it. Now that's how this life works. And I know that's how this life works for me. I leave Sunday for camp. I pick up one of my staff on Monday. On Tuesday, we're going to be somewhere on a rock. Now, there are things that didn't get done this week, and there are things that didn't get done last week. And there are things on the circuit, and there's pastoral things that did not get done. You know what got done? Exercise. Because I have to go do my job now, which I'm grateful to be able to do, but I'm going to go teach our young people leadership, but I'm teaching them on a rock. And I don't want to sit back and say, you know, I did that once, and here's what I remember that I used to do. I want to be able to show them what they must do. So no matter how pressed life got, no matter what was required, no matter the seriousness of the circumstance, because it was an absolute deadline, the training got done. The magazine article. Anything that is important to you, you will find time to do it. The issue, we are all too busy. We're almost all of us too busy. But if there was something that absolutely had to be done, we probably did it. And if we didn't do it, it is because we didn't assign the priority to it that it could have had. One of the others is, I'm too old. Okay? Everybody raise their hand that's too old. I want to see. There's Starla. Nice try, they say. Nice try. Almost no one is too old or too frail to exercise. Because of the natural decline in muscle mass, about 10% a decade starting around age 50, 10% you lose muscle mass in a natural process. Why? Because you don't have the growth hormone. You don't have the same activity level. You don't have the youthful vitality. And dwindling aerobic capacity, same thing on aerobic capacity, just drops by percentages as you get older. The need to stay active is more apparent in old age than in any other stage in your life. So because you're losing muscle mass and you're losing aerobic ability, then the need to exercise is greater than it's ever been. I was watching Steve and Derek walk out of class. How tall are you, Steve? It looked like a dead heat to me. I couldn't believe it. They walked out and it looked about even. Now, I'm 6. And I know I'm taller than Derek. I will always be taller than Derek. But I've taken Derek and wrestled with him, and he's absolutely just solid muscle. And I guarantee he didn't do anything. He even doesn't do his chores. He doesn't work out around the house. It's just built in. He's there. And when he gets to be 50, then he'll look like me. So, you lose capacity as you get older, and it's more critical when we're older to exercise than when we're young. Because the body does it all by itself, in most cases, almost, when we're young. Some of the other excuses, we'll try and knock them all out, because some of you will defend them, as I would, I suppose. I hate going it alone. It is so boring. My kids get in the way. My back hurts. Let's go to my back hurts. That one comes up. It used to be that people with constant back pain were told to stay off their feet. No longer. The general dogma for chronic back pain is that moving your body is a good thing. In fact, studies have shown that people with chronic back pain and disc degeneration were helped just as much by exercise as by spinal fusion surgery. Now, you could argue that there was no benefit to the spinal fusion surgery. That's not the point. The point is, the medical procedure was no more beneficial than just exercising in order to strengthen the muscle structure of the back. When I go climbing and I carry a pack up the side of a mountain and I come back home, my back is in phenomenal muscle shape and condition. If the muscles are, it holds the spine in place. Everything's toned up and working. And for 30 days, I'm spectacular. 30 days. Bodily exercise profits for a little while. So really what I need to do is climb something every month. And then I would be a better pastor. I would be a... I would be in better shape. Other excuses. I'm too fat. Any physical activity is better than none. Okay? That's the answer. Any physical activity is better than none. I'm thin already. We won't go there. There's other issues in terms of health besides thinness. I'm not a gym rat, and I have arthritis. Arthritis can be a vicious circle. It hurts. So sufferers don't want to move much. But the inactivity brings weight gain and thus more pain to overstressed joints. The way to break the cycle of pain and joint deformities, researchers now know, is exercise. Building up muscles with strength exercise, with strength exercises helps care take the strain off of your joints, while aerobic exercise can keep off the weight that exacerbates the disease. The Arthritis Foundation recommends stretching, strengthening, and aerobic exercise. It advises talking with a doctor about what to do during a flare-up, which may include taking pain meds before working out. In other words, you might have to have some advice. But the fact is this. What used to be the advice was to immobilize the body is now to work and use your body within its proper limits. No more excuses. Ecclesiastes 5, going back a little bit from where we were to verse 18. Here's what I have seen, Ecclesiastes 5:18. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives him, for it is his heritage. You could say, well, back then they didn't have computers. Or back then they didn't have, you know, some of the office complex systems that we use today. But when you read the Bible, and you can say what you want, that was agrarian, therefore that's how it would read. But the principle is that there is labor and toiling and energy expended, and we receive a blessing from that. Part of the blessing is our increase. Part of the rest of the blessing is the good that it does for us. I'm not talking about working yourself into disability, as many did in the frontier times and since, because of the labors that they were required to perform. But notice this, for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, it is a gift of God. For he will not dwell unduly on the days of his life. You won't spend your time thinking, I wish I hadn't done that. Oh, if only when I was a child I hadn't done that or this, or been involved in those things. If only I would have taken care of myself better. He will not dwell unduly on the days of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart, because he has the fruitfulness of a life well spent. Part of that is the fact that there was labor and toil in such a way that the body was responsive and strengthened and help and strengthened in terms of health as a result. On the back of the section in this magazine, there was an editorial, or maybe it's not an editorial, maybe it's just an article. But it was, we're born to walk. We're born to move. We're born to be utilized in a physical way. Researchers have recently discovered a bevy of genes, ones geared to make us healthier, sturdier, longer-living humans, that do their job only if stimulated by an appropriate dose of physical activity. We have genes in our body that effectively switch off. The fuse just is there open until we exercise. Upon exercise, there are certain chemical changes in the body that are genetically based that cause us to be strengthened and to be happier and to be, in that way, physically increased. More than 140 exercise-related genes are awakened if we get off the couch and engage in physical activity. I'm not sure why that is. It's just the way it is. They're now discovering what God has told us about, that there would be fruitfulness in our labor that goes beyond the increase. These sleeping beauties make proteins with wide-ranging benefits to body metabolism, muscle mass, fat deposition, blood vessels, and immune function. C. Ronald Kahn, an endocrinologist and president of the Diabetes Center in Boston, says, if you don't exercise, you dysregulate your genes. You shut them off. You just shut down some of the body components and systems. Among other things, such miscues lead to the health scourge of our immobile age, a skyrocketing epidemic of type 2 diabetes. Kahn further points out that inactivity is every bit as important a diabetes risk factor as his poor diet. With only modest exercise, for example, genes are turned on that cause muscle to take up glucose even without insulin lowering your blood sugar. Thus, exercise helps patients with diabetes to better control their sugar levels. And among those at risk for diabetes, physical activity significantly reduces their chances of getting the disease in the first place. The fruit of their labors goes beyond material increase. If you're one of those people who get hives at the mere thought of jogging, okay, good old-fashioned walking will do just fine. Good old-fashioned walking will do just fine. The limitation of 30 minutes 5 days a week, because that is what is being, as it says, preached in terms of the exercise community for our health, is that we can't tell if it's enough for each individual without knowing the person's pace and baseline activity. Recognizing this, the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports in 2002 pushed for the routine use of a simple but elegant measure, steps per day tallied by your very own pedometer. You put a pedometer on your belt, and you walk around through the day. And at the end of the day, it'll tell you how many steps you took. And it's no more Mr. Nice Guy. You know what you did or didn't do. Pedometers get right in your face and make you own up to your slothfulness. I'm reading this. I'm not rebuking you. I have to read it. You're sedentary if you don't hit 3,000 to 4,000 steps a day. Ideally, adults should exceed 10,000 steps each and every day, a feat typically achieved only by children and adolescents. The over 50 crowd hovers around 6,000 to 8,500, but here's the number to remember. A half-hour brisk walk counts for 3,000 to 4,000 steps. For most adults, that brings their activity levels to the threshold, to the entry level, that starts signaling the health-promoting genes to go to work. This is critical stuff. This is our health and our livelihood in terms of our calling in the flesh. Sure, we serve God spiritually, but we serve Him through our strength. And He will do that. He will strengthen us, but not necessarily in spite of us or apart from us or without us in that way. Proverbs 17. Verse number 22. Amber asked what my sermon was on today, and I told her the sedentary life. She goes, oh my God, I worked out this week. I am so glad. Proverbs 17:22. A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. Again, I think we've had a tendency to look at that in terms of just our mental attitude and approach. Let's look at it in terms of exercise. Another article that I had saved here entitled Smart Moves came out of U.S. News a while back, a few years back. It says when Tom Conklin was a freshman at Northwestern College in St. Paul, Minnesota, he labored toward a slot on the cross-country team. The prerequisite for trying out was a 2.0 grade point average, and Conklin struggled through most of the year on academic probation. Sophomore year, having inched up to a C average, Conklin qualified. Then when he began training, his average shot up to a B. I could suck in information and remember it, marveled Conklin, who in his years since as a teacher and administrator has routinely steered floundering students into aerobic sports, since it made his mind work better. They've taken rats, and some of them they keep sedentary. They just lay them around, I guess, in a cage. And some of them they put in a cage with some toys so that they're having a little bit of game time as they lay there. And some of them they run through mazes constantly and test and try them and challenge them to accomplish the task. Then they chop them all up and they examine their brains, their little rat brains. And the sedentary rat brains don't have as many blood vessels and don't have as many neural circuits in them as the rats that played with toys. And the rat brains that had activity and challenge are the most highly developed in terms of the neural circuitry and the blood vessels and the feeding of that brain of the set. Fact is, physical exertion and exercises affect our mental processes. And God said a merry heart does good like a medicine, and we think, well, that means think happy thoughts. It goes beyond that. It goes beyond that into the way that God made our bodies to work. The evidence is mounting that each person's capacity to master new and remember old information is improved by biologic changes in the brain brought on by aerobic conditioning. Exercise not only fuels the brain with a better blood supply, but it feeds brain cells with a heartier supply of natural substances that enhance their growth. Add to the aerobics a series of complex coordinated movements like dance steps or basketball moves, and the brain produces a greater number of connections between its neurons. That suggests a brain better able to process all kinds of information. There are studies that link exercise to a reduced impact of dementia and Alzheimer's because people have remained active, and it affects the physical processing of the brain. And then it just goes through different people that they studied in the course of this. And here's a young girl at 12 in a dance class, and she just said, look, dance is my favorite class. I pick the moves up easily, and after I dance, I just feel good. You say, well, she likes to dance. Well, I don't like running up hills, but after I do it, I feel good. There's an endorphin buzz that actually is a positive mood-altering chemical impact that comes from exercise. You don't feel that right away. All you feel initially is pain. But once you're in shape and the body is working, and it'll work at whatever level, but you simply have to proceed. Here's another one that they were interviewing. I come to work out 3 times a week. Afterwards, I feel clear-headed. I'm better at making my connections and putting things together. It's not just a colloquial kind of a circumstance. There's a lot of studies mentioned in the article. A lady here is 85. I try to run every single morning if I can. When I don't, I get crabby. Running makes my mind work better. Scientifically, it is true. 3 John. Verse number 1. To the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health, just as your soul prospers. That there would be prayed that he would be in health. That what? God would just come in and heal him all by himself, and he would just stand there and wait for the process to be fulfilled. I rejoiced greatly when brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. So walking in the truth has to do with being prospered and in health. They're connected together. When you're doing wrong things, there are curses. We heard a sermonette last week that related that. When you're doing right things, there are blessings. And so he says, I rejoice greatly, but I pray for your prosperity and your health. I rejoice greatly to hear that you walked in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. So there are things that we do because it is true, because God said, you know, a merry heart does good like a medicine, and that a slothful hand or a lazy hand, the building will deteriorate or corrupt. Well, we're in a tabernacle, are we not? Does our tabernacle not deteriorate and corrupt if we let it decline in that way? How many Americans are going to go to their graves in our culture on a diet of medicines and pills? How many are going to have to take one pill to modify or overcome the effects of the other pill? It is a national epidemic, and it is constantly on the increase. And there are things, brethren, that we can do to impact that process in a positive way. How many of our anointings are in regard to lifestyle choices? How many anointings are in regard to lifestyle choices? Another article I pulled, this one came out of Reader's Digest, says, is your life worth 30 minutes a day? And this goes into some of the health issues specifically. What can help prevent stroke, heart disease, and some cancers? What can lift depression, ease arthritis pain, and increase both the length and quality of life, to name just a few of its benefits? It says if we put that in a pill, they would dispense that from every medical counter in the country. But the answer is E-word, exercise. Exercise. It would be easier if it was in a pill. Just looking at my clock, there it is. Diabetes. The number of Americans diagnosed with diabetes has increased sixfold in less than my lifetime. Sixfold. This alarming rise is linked to our expanding waistlines, junk food diet, and inactivity. Some experts feel that the most common form of diabetes, type 2, this was in a different article as well, is preventable with a proper diet and regular activity. In diabetes, the hormone insulin does not properly regulate glucose levels in the blood. When people exercise, the body fuels the activity by taking glucose out of the blood to use for energy. Heart attacks, stroke. One of the simplest, safest, least expensive, and most effective strategies for improving heart health is frequently neglected: exercise. It reduces blood pressure, can help raise the level of good HDL cholesterol while lowering bad cholesterol when combined with dietary change. Mental health. How many of you want some mental health? I'll take some. I'll take any I can get. When asked why she started swimming laps during her freshman year at Boston University, world-class endurance swimmer Julie Ridge replied, it was a sanity thing. While sedentary people may assume that working out is about looking good, habitual exercisers like Ridge know that it is largely about feeling good. A growing body of research shows that physical activity does indeed exert a feel-good effect that can work as a powerful treatment for depression. I met my brother one time a few years ago down in Medford where my mom is, and I got on my tennis shoes and I went out and ran all over the place around the golf course and back, and I came back and he looked at me and says, what's wrong with you? You stressed out or something? Well, yeah. But I did. I just went out and just ran, came back, and then that was his question. Well, you know, are you stressed out? Well, it helps. It helps me not be stressed out. Exercise can help people with arthritis. We've come from thinking that physical fitness was impossible for people with arthritis to knowing that exercise is one of the best ways to manage their disease and to minimize its disability. Exercise can reduce pain by keeping joints flexible, the muscles around the joints strong. Cancer. The second leading cause of death in the United States after heart disease. Isn't it amazing that heart disease and cancer are the two leading causes of death, and exercise impacts significantly both of them? Both of them. Really sedentary lifestyle that we have built in this nation. According to one large study of people at various levels of fitness, the least fit men died from cancer at a rate more than three times higher than that of the most fit men. Now, there could be other issues involved, but it's a factor. An earlier study found the least fit women in that study had fully 16 times the cancer death rate as the most fit women. Scientists still don't know the precise mechanism by which exercise appears to exert an anti-cancer effect, but current thinking points to physical activity's effect on the immune and the endocrine systems? So the answer from the article, move it. Remember, any of you remember Gomer Pyle in the Army and Sergeant Carter? You know, move it, move it, move it. That was all the movie. We constantly, he's chasing Gomer Pyle around. Well, the answer from the article is, well, move it. Get going. Do what you have to do. Psalm 103. It's our life. It's our health. It's our ability to function the best we possibly can. Psalm 103, verse 1. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, forget not all his benefits, who forgives all your iniquities, who heals all your diseases, who redeems your life from destruction, who crowns you with loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfies your mouth with good things. Why does God give us good things? So that your youth is renewed like the eagles. The good things God gives us is for our health, not for our consumption to our own detriment, not for our injury. And when we eat and drink to our injury, we are not responding to why God blessed us in the first place. I mentioned years ago that we had a doctor, Dr. Wright in Lubbock, before we came up here, who was a nutritionist, doctor, D.O., a very capable man, and he said the three biggest mistakes in diet are, and when I asked the question I think once before, it was so obvious and clear, what is the first biggest mistake in diet? Anybody want to give me a try? Just the first biggest mistake in diet. He didn't mention the water. I'm sorry. Nancy. All right, I'm going to go back to my notes. Processed sugar, processed food, processed oil, basically. Refined sugar, refined foods, and hydrogenated fat. He put in those three things were the biggest mistakes that we make. A couple years back, remember the church put together a cookbook, and we all sent in recipes, and I didn't really see it. Derek sent in a recipe. He had his favorite cookie recipe. That was a number of years back now, because it goes back into junior high. So he went ahead and got the recipe that junior high they used for cookies. And he sent it in because they were wonderful cookies. And Diane Bailey called me as they're putting this together and there was something they needed on information. And I said, well, what is it he sent in? And he said, well, here's the recipe. And he read it off and it was, you know, 500 pounds of this and 200 pounds. I mean, it was like feeding the whole junior high. But then it was with Crisco. And I said, I said, you can't do that. Just throw that away. She said, I can't do that to Derek. I said, believe me, throw it away. There's not going to be a recipe in that book that says Nicholson on it with a big tub of Crisco attached to one end. It's not going to happen. Now, Derek, he just loved the cookies. They were great. Well, Derek could probably eat them and get away with it for a time. But you know, someday there's a payback for those things. The hydrogenated oil, the refined sugar, and the refined food is killing us. And sometimes we don't believe it. We used to believe it. But sometimes we don't believe it the same way anymore. Now, if we've ever talked personally, I've mentioned my philosophy. You know, I have... Probably had a fast food hamburger, okay? And there was no mayo, and there was no ketchup, and I ate it dry. But I also ran 3 miles in the morning and burned and sweated the hamburger out from the day before. Now, I know what I'm saying. Body's a furnace. It has fuel. It burns fuel. It pushes out poison. So you have to kind of decide what it is that you can do and what your body will do and how you can compensate for what you choose. But let us not poison ourselves. Let us not drag ourselves into the grave after a long medical trauma that we put on ourselves. Let us not need to be anointed over and over again for lifestyle choices.
let us put God first. Christ says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Now that's the part we always quote. But you know what the next part of it says? He says, because there's no work in the grave. Work is a blessing. Work is not just activity that fills our life with things so that we won't get bored. Work and labor is something that is supposed to encourage our health and strength, our mental ability, our ability to think and to process, our ability to be as strong as we can in this flesh. Not so that we can go get some medal for it, but so that we can serve one another and do God's will. We live in the midst of a country that has developed a sedentary life. There was a new individual sitting in church in Lewiston today. Never talked to him. Never seen him. Joe Hasnerl had never talked to him, never seen him. He talked to somebody. They told him where church was. He came in and sat down. And I go, great. I'm giving a real physical sermon. We got a brand new person. They're going to say, oh, this guy didn't even have a spiritual focus. I went ahead. I said, well, this is what I prepared. This is important. This is what I want to do, you know. Turned out he worked in an office, a doctor's office. He's a medical personnel of some type. And he went through and he said, you know, he says, we take x-rays of people. And if it's a lady that comes in and she's a farmer and she's worked out on the farm and used her hands and been into, you know, had to throw hay bales at some point and worked through her life, her bones are hard as a rock. And he says, if a woman walks in who hasn't had any of that in her lifestyle, he said, you can almost see through the bones. They're so porous. He just said, labor. There's no work in the grave. It is a blessing when we have physical labor in this life. So it doesn't matter if we're arthritic, or if we have some pains and aches, or if we're busy, or the children are hanging on our legs. They hang on our legs, right? We go through those stages. I'm sorry. They do. We still need exercise. We need to be mobile. We need to use the strength that God gives us. We need to cry out for what we don't have. But we need to do our part. Faith without works is dead. It isn't enough to believe. You have to also do. So I would encourage us. We don't all have a deadline that says if you don't do this, then tomorrow you're going to look like a complete fool. But we need to set some deadlines in our own lives. Get that pedometer, maybe. Just stick it on your belt. And just see how many steps you take. And if it's not enough, then take a few more, because that's hard science. You can see this is what I did today. But let us do our part to be strong in God's service.